Thank you for that introduction, because you do make it clear that Israel advocacy has a reverse side, which is repression of pro-Palestinian activism. They're just reverse sides of the same coin. And my own interest in this stems from the darker side. The information that I'll be providing is available, most of it is available in an article in Canadian Dimension from November, December 2005, if people are interested. And my research was prompted by various acts of repression at York University. And two of us on the panel, Dan Freeman Malloy and myself, have been the targets of that repression. And it was in the wake of that that I tried to figure out what was going on. And let me just put it in relief, because we tend to forget these things. Dan and I are both Jews. We got no support at all for these campaigns, which were campaigns of defamation, among other things, from B'nai B'rith, the Canadian Jewish Congress, the United Jewish Appeal Federation. As Jews being defamed in the public arena by powerful institutions, one would expect these institutions to run to our support. But they didn't. Indeed, they joined in the attack. Now, last week, I wrote to B'nai B'rith, formally asking for their public support and a public condemnation of York University. I haven't heard back from them. But I did send a copy to the Toronto Star and the National Post as well. Now, we tend not to think in these terms, and as we expect, of course they would not support us. Okay. The reason they won't support us is because these organizations are pro-Israeli organizations. They're not Jewish organizations. And the case of Dan and myself makes this so stark that my writing to B'nai B'rith for support in a defamation campaign against me, a Jew, is seen as almost laughable, okay, is an indictment of those organizations. What I found out in doing some of this research, and all the information I have here is public information, and I'm not a denizen of cyberspace generally. So if I can get this information, anybody can get this information. It's all public. What I discovered is that in the wake of the Intifada in 2000, there was a reshuffling, a refocusing, a reinvigorating of pro-Israel advocacy in Canada. One organization, Hillel of Greater Toronto, which might be represented here today, explicitly shifted their focus from support of the Jewish community to pro-Israel advocacy. Okay. Zach Kay, the head of that organization, was a participant in the repression against both Dan and me, okay, with York University. This reinvigoration coalesced in 2002 in the wake of the events at Concordia University in Montreal, when student protests led to the cancellation of a speech by Benjamin Netanyahu. This event was seen by some as a humiliation. And they vowed that it would never happen again. They were unprepared for it. Among those who viewed the events with alarm were Heather Reisman and Gerald Schwartz. Heather Reisman is the CEO of Indigo Chapters. I hope you don't buy books there. Gerald Schwartz is CEO of the Onyx Corporation, one of the founders of CanWest Global. Two of the wealthiest, they call them the power couple, you know, the press. They were also politically very, very well connected. Heather Reisman was the niece of Simon Reisman, one of the negotiators of NAFTA. And her husband, Gerald Schwartz, was one of the chief fundraisers of the Liberal Party before he became a conservative. These two people pulled together some of their friends, similarly powerful and financially influential, to form what they call the Israel Emergency Cabinet. Among the members were Larry Tanenbaum, owner of Maple Leafs, Brent Belzberg, who owns Torquest Partners, and others, former Senator Leo Kolber, former director of the Toronto-Dominion Bank, Seagram's, Lois Cineplex. I hope you don't go to Lois Cineplex. The late Izzy Asper, co-founder and CEO of CanWest Global. Stephen Reitman, whose family owns Reitman's clothing stores. Julia Koschitsky, whose family fortune derives from a conglomerate in the construction industry, IKO. Stephen Cummings, the CEO of Maxwell Cummings Corporation. Together, these people represented billions of dollars in assets and, as I said, very strong political connections nationally. What they did is they pulled together the existing organizations, the Canadian Israel Committee, the Canadian Jewish Congress, and put together a sort of a central organization for controlling the funding of Israel advocacy, and it was called CIGA, C-I-G-A, or C-C-I-G-A, the Canadian Council on Israel and Jewish Advocacy, chaired by Tanenbaum, Belzberg, and Cummings. This became the engine. Again, it was set up in 2002. There were some within the existing organizations that saw this as the word that was used was a hostile takeover by some of the most powerful people in Canada, intent on essentially controlling all of the existing organizations. And Dan might go into more of a history of those organizations. So what we have here, and again, these are words that were used by various people, I won't go into the details, a hijacking, not only of the organizations, but of Jewish identity itself in Canada, by a well-heeled and politically well-connected bunch of zealots. Which is why Dan and I don't get any support from their organizations. For them, we are the enemy. What they began to do using their resources is put together seminars, conferences, symposia, what they called education. They more than doubled the number of visits, they call them missions, to Israel for Canadian politicians, opinion makers. For those of you in Toronto, you might know that the police chiefs of Ontario all went on such a junket, as have many university presidents, including the president where we are at York University. They also set up CIGA PAC, which is a public affairs, meaning of a political lobbying organization, and boasted that CIGA, quote, has the ear of those who make decisions. And if you have been paying attention, as I'm sure you have, over the last year or two, there's been a very significant shift in Canadian foreign policy vis-a-vis Israel, a tilt in that direction. So what we have is a concentration of wealth and power, a coordination of funding agencies, and a redoubling of pro-advocacy efforts, which, again, the underside is repression of pro-Palestinian activities. And given that the formation of CEJA was prompted by events at Concordia University, it should not be surprising that one of the main focuses of attention for these organizations now were the post-secondary institutions, the campuses. Much of CEJA's efforts centered on the National Jewish Campus Life Department of the UIA Federation, created specifically to identify so-called influentials on campus, people who work for the newspaper, student government, what have you, to cultivate them, train them, send them to Israel. CEJA contributed more than $1 million, this is as of 2005, for use on Canadian post-secondary campuses. They hired full-time representatives in cities across the country. These were people who were essentially full-time staff, apparatus of pro-Israel advocacy. And then they would go into the campuses, identify people. This is Montreal, Toronto, Winnipeg, Vancouver. They set up another organization called the National Jewish Campus Life Organization to further these efforts, and subsidized the visits to Israel for campus leaders. They sent them to training camps to become more effective campus advocates. So we're talking about a very well-oiled and aggressive campaign across Canada. They also worked very closely with university administrations. Okay. And very briefly, I'll just take 2 minutes here to talk quickly about York, because York was one of the centers of their activity. York is the third largest university in Canada. We should remind ourselves that it's a public institution, and nominally a secular institution. And legally, by the way, a secular institution, according to the York University Act of 1964, which prohibits explicitly any religious observances, etc. York University, in the wake of these activities, became essentially captive to the lobby. The loci of influence at York is the York University Foundation, which is the money machine for York University, set up as an independent legal entity in order to immunize it from public scrutiny. If we look at the board of that organization, we see some of the most prominent pro-Israel activists in Canada. And again, take a look at the article, and I won't go into all the details because of a shortage of time. York University's president and some of the top administrators, including the head of the York University Foundation, went on their own mission to Israel, funded by Julie Koschitzky and Gerald Schwartz. So knowing this, and I didn't know it at the time, it becomes more understandable that when Dan Freeman Molloy and some of his colleagues were engaged in pro-Palestinian demonstrations, both on campus and off campus, they would be subject to scrutiny and attack. So when the president of the university unilaterally and summarily suspended and banned Dan for 3 years, banned, exile for 3 years, without any regard whatsoever for established procedures and policies. Okay. We have to understand that she did it for these folks. And in fact, she did it to overcome the humiliation of Concordia. Now, I've done Freedom of Information requests, and I have a pile of documents now from York University about me, and I have all these letters that went into Lorna Marsden, explicit about overcoming the humiliation of Concordia by clamping down at York. Okay. So when I went to Dan's support, I didn't know Dan at the time, and hired him as my research assistant to defy the ban, this should be normal behavior. The abuse of a student by the president. Where was the faculty? They came down on me. So when I did the research and found out that the Israel lobby was at the core of the institution and suggested that this was an explanation for these acts against Dan and the others, the hammer came down on me directly. Within 24 hours after handing out a leaflet at a public event on campus indicating this influence, York University, including the president of York University, issued a press release within 24 hours. If there are any people in a university, to get a university to do something in 24 hours. I'm still waiting for chairs in my office. It's been a month. Okay. We're talking about a very tightly coordinated effort here, okay, that can turn on a dime. And the press releases went to the Globe and Mail and the Toronto Star, which dutifully, I mean, they're stenographers, essentially, published them. Okay. Simultaneous with the press release from York was a press release from Hillel of Greater Toronto, UJA Federation, the Canadian Jewish Congress, attacking me as an anti-Semite. When I saw it, I figured, well, they just didn't do their homework and they didn't know I was Jewish. And I don't know the answer. Okay. They didn't know I was a historian. They called me a sociologist. But these campaigns, Zach Kay, the head of Hillel of Greater Toronto, was a signatory, was party to both press releases. He's a signatory to York's press release, and he has no position at York University. It's quite stunning. But these are not random events. And as my colleague here will show, they're not unique to York. Thank you.